One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Patrick, and you're listening to the Phileas Club. This is episode number 2 for May 27th, 2008, Made Up Holidays. So this is episode number 2 of the Phileas Club. Welcome, everyone. If this is the first time you are listening to our show, welcome to you. And if you are a returning listener, you might notice that we are going to change the format a little bit. I thought the last show was great, but I needed something that was a little bit more focused. So we are going to have two parts in the show today and from now on. The first part is going to be a few big international stories that we are all going to discuss. And the second part is going to be smaller local stories from each of our panelists. And talking about panelists, we have a fantastic group lined up today, and I'm going to introduce them right now. The first panelist is Turkey, and he has a wonderful blog and podcast about life in Saudi Arabia. So he's currently residing in the US, but he's originally from Saudi Arabia. Hi, Turkey. What time is it for you? How's the weather, and how are you?
Well, hi, Patrick. I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Well, it's 11 a.m. here, and it's a bit cloudy for summertime, so... I'm stuck at home during Memorial Day.
Well, it's actually raining here. It's 5 p.m. in Paris here where I am, and it's raining actually. It's been raining for the past week, and it's pretty horrible. So,
I know cloudy. The feeling. It's the same thing here. It's been raining too much for us.
Well, it changes from Saudi Arabia, I guess. It's basically the summer all the time there, right?
Oh, yeah, that's the nice weather. Where you have the sun out all the time. It's warm. It's nice.
You don't ever get sick of it?
Well, you have air conditions. Just go in home, turn your air condition on, and you're okay.
If you feel like winter, you just turn on the air conditioning, right?
Exactly.
So our second panelist is Arthur from the Armenian blog, the Armenian Observer. So he's obviously from Armenia. And you are currently in Yerevan, right? Which is the capital of Armenia. That's right, Arthur?
Yep, that's right. That's right. And we have clouds and hot, and hopefully your French rain will come over this way very soon.
See, we should get things to work better with the world. Like, we have too much rain. You need it. We should be able to send it over. What time is it for you now, Arthur?
It's right now like 20 past 20 or something. But yeah, basically that's it.
So 8 p.m.
It's 20 p.m. Yeah, 8 p.m.
Okay. So welcome, Arthur. And our third guest is Randy from the U.S. He doesn't have a political blog, but we know each other from a video game podcast, and we've known each other for quite a while now. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well. Very well indeed. And I'd say we've known each other for about 2 years, which is surprising how fast that time has passed by.
Yeah. And we've never actually met each other, although that might happen this summer.
That's imminent. I'm in Central Texas. It is hot. It's a holiday for a Monday, and it's overcast. 10 a.m. as we start recording from my vantage point.
Okay. So I want to talk about that holiday for just a minute. But before that, I actually have a question for Arthur and Turkey. So Randy and I know each other because of this video game thing. And I just in a few sentences, what's the state of the video game market and industry in your countries? Like, I would like to know how it's like in Armenia and Saudi Arabia. Because when I think about Saudi Arabia, I think gas and sand, and Armenia, I don't even know. So tell me, do you have PS3s and Xboxes and Nintendo Wii's and stuff like that? Turkey, if you can go first.
Well, yeah, of course we got all of those games. Xboxes, 360, PlayStation 3, Nintendo's.
Arthur, I was reading your blog a little while ago, and I saw that about 5%, I think, of the population now has internet access. That can't be good for the technology industry. You can't have that much video games, do you?
Actually, we have a lot of video games. Now, the other thing that you should know is Armenia was ranked the first in world piracy rate. I mean, Armenia is the state where you have the most amount of pirated software, including video games. So
it's not China? I could have sworn it was China or somewhere in Asia, Southeast Asia maybe, or... Okay. What about this Memorial Day thing? So for you, Turkey, you were telling me you wanted to get a new mic actually today, and you didn't realize that it was a holiday. I don't even know what Memorial Day is in the U.S. Do you know, or should we ask Randy?
It's a one-day holiday, the last Monday in the month of May every year, and it's a federally created holiday where we memorialize those who have given their lives in foreign service, military service.
Turkey, okay, I really want to get into the meat of the show, but just before we do that, I have another question. You were telling me, Turkey, about the amount of holidays that we dirty Europeans and Americans had. Can you tell for our audience how many holidays you have in Saudi Arabia each year?
Hey, did you just say dirty? I never said that. I never used the word dirty. You don't put words in my mouth.
Hey, I'm trying to stir up some controversy, you know?
Saudi
Arabia versus the US. That's the meat of the show. Sorry, go ahead. What were you saying?
I was just saying, it's just apparently in Western culture, people do honor a lot of holidays, and many of these holidays are just made up holidays. Every year they add a new holiday, and I'm thinking within the next 50 years Europe and the US would have half of the year full of holidays and only working half the other half.
Hey, I'm not worried about holidays. More holidays is better to me, but I'm French, so what do I know? What about you?
Hey,
Arthur,
I'm a student, I'm here studying, and I want to get be done with my classes. I don't need more holidays.
What about you, Arthur? Armenia is full of holidays too?
In May alone, we had like five holidays which you don't go to work at all.
Well, there you go. You're ready to be part of Europe, I say. You have five holidays in 1 month. That's the right way to do it.
Yeah, trying hard.
Okay, let's go into the first part of the show with our international news. Okay, first story I want to talk about is the one from Burma, obviously. So for people who didn't hear about this, I don't know what you've been doing, friend and listener. But if you haven't heard about what's happened in Burma, you need to get out more, I would say. Burma, of course, had a terrible tragedy happening at the beginning of the month. A hurricane arrived and basically destroyed a huge part of the country. And today the toll, the number of deaths is at about 130,000-140,000 just by direct death from the hurricane. Now, this kind of things happen all around the world, but the really terrible thing in Burma was the fact that the military, it's a military regime, basically. The junta, which rules the country, didn't want to let humanitarian aid enter the country because they didn't want... one of you guys can tell me why they didn't want the aid to get in the country and let their people die. I don't know. Turkey, why don't you tell us what you heard about this?
Well, first of all, it's okay to lose your English. I lose it a lot, so don't worry about that part. And basically what's going on in Burma, as far as I can understand, is because Burma is not really popular but it's throughout the world, they're very harsh government, dictatorship, a military dictatorship, and they really are not interested, and they're worried about getting people in to find out the truth of what's going inside Burma and starting to spread the word to the Burmese people about the reality of the rest of the world, because nobody knows what's going on.
So you could say maybe it's a protective measure that could be similar to something like we saw in communist Russia that, Arthur, you might know something about a little bit.
Doctor? Yeah, basically, I would agree with most of what Turkey just said. From what I know is, military junta is really restrictive of, especially they're scared of, you know, foreigners generally, because these people come, go make possible contacts with opposition, transfer stuff back and forth. As far as I know, Burma has one of the biggest restrictive internet firewalls. They don't issue visas. They have like 800 mobile phones in the whole country kind of stuff, just because they want to have everything under control. In Soviet Union, what we saw in 1988, there was a major earthquake in Armenia, actually, and the whole world came here in a sign of, you know, friendship, and the Soviets opened the border. What we saw afterwards is Soviets collapsed. Not that it's directly related to the help from the world, but in Armenia, people thought of this imperialist, this dirty capitalist outside of Soviet borders, and the government was facilitating this idea, saying that everything outside of Soviets is bad. And then suddenly, there you have it. You have an earthquake, and everybody, all these kind people are coming with help. Same, as far as I understand, and as far as my friends have told me about Burma, is there. They are saying about creating this image of enemy. Everybody outside of Burma is our enemy. And then opening borders and having all this assistance would contradict to this picture, I guess.
I guess we could all agree that the regime in Burma is bad, but the angle that I'm interested in here is the angle of intervention, interfering with another country, because the idea is what a lot of people were saying is, you know, stuff the junta, let's just go in because people need help, and let's just go in the country and give food to the people, which sounds like a very good idea on the humane part, but politically it's a very strong and bold and dangerous move. So I would be interested to ask you, Randy, actually, what you think about this, considering your country is, well, known for not being very embarrassed when they actually enter uninvited in countries, which, you know, sometimes is warranted, sometimes not that much.
Exactly. And that's the problem, is from one incident to the next, you are colored by the very last major incident and how it was handled and whether or not there came to blows and so forth. It's very, very difficult, for example, to coalesce the thoughts, we need to go in and help these people. And at the same time, boy, we sure would like to help raise up the people who are suffering, and not necessarily from the hurricane at the same time.
Well, okay, to be completely fair, we have to, on May 22nd, the junta actually allowed the associations to enter the country and to help the people, but it did take 3 weeks. But the thing is, with that story, everyone speaks in one voice and says, we should be allowed to get in and to save people. But when something happens, for example, in Yugoslavia, which is even closer to our countries, to our civilized countries, we debate endlessly about if we should go in or not, and it takes the will of the American government to actually just go in. It's a generalization, but I think Turkey.
The real problem is with Burma or Myanmar or whatever they want to call it these days. It's the fact that they did not give enough warning to their own people about the cyclone. They never prepared for it. They just let the whole thing hit people, killed 120,000 people or so, and after that they even ignored helping them. So it's they didn't warn them in advance, and they're not helping them after it happened.
Yeah, but does that mean, would you, okay, for example, would you, Turkey, be for going in without the agreement of the Burmese government?
Well, in my personal opinion, I believe no government or any national should enter a country without permission. It's the duty of the people of that country to rise against that government and force it to do what is right.
Okay. Arthur, what do you think about that? Should we go in without their agreement?
There is an issue about mandate. I think power eventually lies with the people who have to rule themselves. So in Burma, people are in a bad condition, oppressed. They can't rule themselves. However, nobody other than them has the mandate to decide for themselves what's good and what's bad. So they have this government, which is somehow legitimized by the same U.S., I mean, or China or anybody else recognizing or not recognizing, but still dealing with it. I mean, if U.S. government asks Myanmar authorities if they should enter or not enter, doing this means they legitimize that government. After that, they have no mandate to enter it without its permission.
Right, but when you see the numbers, like 130,000 deaths, it's, you know, it does put things in perspective. But I guess ultimately the international community does agree with this, and obviously they can't do anything else. You know, they can't get in anyway, and I think that's the consensus there. Okay, let's move on to another story, which is equally complicated and horrible, which is the one from Beirut. And at this point, I should probably disclose the fact that I was born in Beirut. I left the country at the beginning of the war a long time ago when I was 2 years old and have lived in Paris ever since. But I did. I was born in Beirut in Lebanon. So, yeah, I should probably say that. And I'm going to give a little bit of background about that also. The civil war started again briefly when Hezbollah took arms and invaded the west of the town, of the city of Beirut. And I think a lot of people have heard from this. I don't know that everyone has heard of the reasons why Hezbollah invaded basically half of the city. Did you guys hear about the reasons why, Turkey?
Yeah, it's, the reasons were apparently Hezbollah, with the support of Iran, they mounted video cameras to monitor the airport. They built their own communication system with fiber optics throughout the country. And when the government found out, and the government decided to shut down all of these things and declared them illegal, and apparently Hezbollah was not happy with that, and they just got to arms and decided it's time for war.
Arthur, did you hear about the reasons also?
Not really. Actually, we are getting a very different perspective of this story because we have a large Armenian diaspora there, and all coverage is how is this bad war affecting, or internal fighting affecting, Armenian community all in all. So basically we're just hearing whether this is bad or good, or how many Armenians are leaving Lebanon and things like that. That's why we're not really getting into. And it's really dangerous for Armenia to engage or to speculate anything politically related inside stuff going on in Lebanon. So our news are, I'd say, cautious.
Okay. Well, okay, for the people who don't know, you have a common border with Iran, which is basically backing Hezbollah, I guess.
Yes, we do.
How are your relationships with Iran?
Very warm, and warming up even further. And we have very good relationships also with US and Russia, something that's quite abnormal, but that's a fact.
Yeah. How do you pull it off? Maybe you should give us a couple of lessons. How can you be friends with everyone?
Well, the problem is you can't. So the government is navigating between these world powers and wannabe superpowers, and I don't know what's going to come out of it in the end.
Okay, Randy, I'm going to go to you now because obviously the current U.S. Administration, the Bush administration, is not very happy with Iran, and they are backing Hezbollah. How did you hear about that Hezbollah story, and did you hear at all about Lebanon?
We get a very high view, you know, sort of an overview of what's going on in Lebanon on our usual news. You know, so for instance, tonight there will be a story about how President Bush made contact with the new president of Lebanon and invited him to come to Washington. But they won't, you know, they won't get into how interesting that is. Because one of the worst things in a lot of the most struggling places in the world, one of the worst things you can do is make friends with George Bush, and I don't know, our news would never get into the, you know, trying to understand how it's a bad situation even with this turn of events, because they're giving Hezbollah veto power, you know, they're trying to form a national unity government, and national unity governments never work. And you know, so it's there's a lot going on there that we just will not hear about.
Right. Well, what they did basically with the help of Qatar and the Arab League. Okay, let's go back a little bit to the roots of the conflict, which is Syria basically wants Lebanon, and it was a part of Lebanon. Lebanon was a part of Syria a long time ago, and it has claims to the country. In all. So it's been pushing internal wars for years and years, and Hariri was getting a lot of power and he was against Syria. So basically, it's highly speculated in a lot of places that Syria had him killed. And since then, over the past year and a half, they haven't had a president because they couldn't get in a consensus to get one guy in office. And all the anti-Syrian political personalities have been assassinated one after the other. And what happened now with this consensus for this president, who was the supreme commander of the army, is that the reasons why the Hezbollah took their weapons was basically against the government, because they had, as you said, Turkey installed a personal network of telecommunications and video cameras, private video cameras, surveilling the airport, which is obviously very illegal, but it's almost certain that with this thing they did, with the consensus they got, the cameras are back in the airport. It's almost certain. To put things more clearly, Hezbollah got what they wanted, and they are backed by Iran through Syria. But
let me clarify a few things.
Yes, please do. I see this from very far, so maybe you'll know better.
Yeah, first of all, Syria, Lebanon was never part of Syria. Lebanon has always been in its own independent government. Even during the Ottoman Empire, it was its own region. It was never part of Syria. Syria has no part in Lebanon. The real problem in Lebanon is the huge division. It's just so divided of a country. There's actually, you would say it's almost exactly divided into three-thirds. One-third Christians, one-third Sunnis, and one-third Shias. So it's exactly the debt. And they went through a huge civil war for, I think, since, what, 75 until 1990 something. I'm not sure exactly.
Well, it never really stopped, but yeah, more or less like this.
Yeah, and then in the resolution where they stopped this civil war officially was even worse, as they have this sectic government where it's officially the president has to be a Christian, the prime minister has to be a Sunni, and the head of the parliament has to be a Shia. So it's a very complicated situation. Apparently, Israel is helping that situation because Hezbollah can lose all power and right to carry arms in Lebanon, as simple as if Israel turns in the Shab'a farms or Mazar-e Shab'a to Lebanon, and which Hezbollah in Lebanon claims that's a part of Lebanon, and Israel claims it's part of Syria. And that's the problem. It's as simple as that.
Well, I would agree. I would argue that they always find something more. We enter personal views land here, I think, and it's important to say that. I would think that both Hezbollah and other factions in the region always find something else that they're claiming. And the situation is incredibly difficult between Christians in a small sense and the Jewish state, obviously, and Sunni and Shiite. And maybe I could ask, because we always hear, I think most people will tell you that the heart of the issues, of most issues in the Middle East, are the differences between Sunni and Shiite, and we don't really know what those are. So again, I'm going to turn to Turkey and ask, maybe you could tell us what exactly is the issue that Sunni and Shiite have.
Well, basically, first of all, Shias are a minority in the Muslim population. So, right. And most of the Shias, like there's only one Shia at the government or country in the world, which is Iran, which is officially majority Shia. Iraq has a majority Shia, and those are the only countries with a majority of Shias. The majority of Muslims are Sunnis. And the basic division is very difficult to say. However, the most simplest way to divide them is the Shias do have their views of authority, a religious authority. They do have the Ayatollah, who is the final religious authority. He's the God's servant, he's God's hand on earth, and he has the authority to say what is law and what is not in Islam. However, the Sunnis do not have a central authority. There's no Ayatollah, there's nothing, and it's not mandated. Other religious people can have different opinions. So that's the basic difference between the two faiths. And the fight between them has been going on since the, I think, 8th century.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah, okay. I'm not going to talk about things I don't really, really know, so I'll just leave it at that. But I'll ask Arthur, you are basically living in a country that's on the border of all those countries, those Middle Eastern countries. What do you think about that situation between Sunni and Shiite?
Well, first of all, you have also to know that we are the country which has like 99% Christian population. So we really know, you know, more than less we should know. I mean, we really know very little bit about religion and about what relations like Muslim religion. What we know is that we are at war with Azerbaijan, which is a Muslim country. We have very tense relations with Turkey, which is again a Muslim country, and we have pretty good, you know, trade relations and diplomatic relations with Iran, and that's like our only option. Actually, we have to have at least one good neighbor and work with it. So, in that sense, I have no idea.
You're not friends with everyone, actually, like we were saying before. What about you, Randy? What do you know about the differences between Sunni and Shiite?
I do, and I'm reminded of this time I went to get my hair cut, and my barber was a Persian lady. And so I sat down, and I said, from Iran, tell me about your country, this sort of thing. And then after we had talked about Iran for a little while, I said, what do you think about Iraq? And she said, I don't understand what you mean. And I said, well, this is neighboring country. To your homeland, what do you think about what's going on there? And she said, I don't know anything that's going on there. Why would you ask me that? I don't care about that. And I thought that was really fascinating, that idea, that because the general perception is that it would be the other way around. The American would be the one who doesn't care and doesn't know and doesn't care to know. And I was genuinely interested in her opinion. She didn't have one. It doesn't surprise me anymore when I find out. The fact is, I live a few miles, a few hundred miles from Mexico. I would say most people most of my neighbors know absolutely nothing about the political landscape of Mexico, about really anything in that huge country. And so I kind of understand. But I was just reminded of that just now. It makes sense. You know, we're all in a country, our countries where we
have... I guess the difference is here, and it's going to link to our second next topic, which is going to be the last international topic. The fact that in the Middle East, basically what happens there is an influence to the rest of the world, mainly because the oil is in the Middle East. So when Shi'i hate Sunni, and when the Israeli do something and the Arab countries do something else, it's going to change the world, basically. And that's why it's more important. I don't want to be too harsh on Mexico, but yeah, that's why it's more important than for other parts of the world. And talking about issues and problems, it was the 60th birthday of, anniversary, I guess, of the creation of the State of Israel, the country of Israel. And I'm very curious, obviously, to know, again, Turkey, what you think of it or what was heard about it in Saudi Arabia, considering the history between the Arab states and Israel itself.
Well, in Saudi Arabia, we're celebrating 60 years of Palestinians being kicked out of their nation.
Okay, that's pretty clear. So I guess the official line is not very friendly towards Israel.
Of course, it's not friendly at all. Nobody likes Israel. Fortunately, Israel is a fact of life now. However, the fact that it's there, it doesn't mean that we have to approve its existence. I'm not saying there are people, but we do have the king of Saudi Arabia had resolved an issue that it was adopted by all the Arab countries, by the Arab League, which is clearly declares that the Arab world would do full diplomatic relations with Israel as soon as Israel draws back its forces back to the 67 lines.
Okay, but I see where you're going there, but you're saying basically, as you were for the Hezbollah issue, which it's in the ball is in Israel's court, and they could just resolve the whole issue by doing one simple thing. The question I would like to submit to you would be, throughout the short history of Israel, I think it's safe to say that it's been attacked by Arab, I mean, the different country, wars that happened between Israel and the surrounding Arab countries were initiated by the Arab countries. And of course, they wouldn't have been initiated if Israel wasn't created out of thin air in the first place. And again, that could be argued by the fact that, you know, it's the promised land and they were there and Zionists. Well, it's a whole big story, but the conflicts were initiated by the Arab countries. What would you say to that?
Well, it's simple. This is an official mandate that the Arab countries put on the ground, signed papers, it's official, it's everything. As simple as draw your forces, give us the lands of the 67 war, back half of Jerusalem on those lands, and we will officially recognize Israel as a nation, and we will have diplomatic relationships with you. As simple as that. This is official. This is a written paper. This is official. It's a known fact. It's not like in the old days where, oh, we will consider it, we will think it. This is an official proposal that is even recognized by the UN.
Okay, so what you're saying is, you know, the past is in the past, as I guess a lot of people could agree would be a good thing for a lot of conflicts in that region.
Of course, I'm not promising the people of the Middle East will support this resolution, but I can promise the governments are going to support it and they're going to do it.
Well, I guess you have to start somewhere. Why would you think that the Israeli government doesn't agree to that if it's that simple?
It's a Zionist government. They believe Palestine should be part of them. They're not very happy about supporting the establishment of a Palestinian state, and they're certainly have no interest of giving half of Jerusalem back to the Arabs. So that's basically it.
Randy, how did you hear about Israel? I think the interesting thing here is that America has very good relationships with both Israel and Saudi Arabia, as we all know. And how did they approach that, considering what Turkey told us about Saudi Arabia and Israel just a minute ago?
And I would say, relatively speaking, that the United States does have good relationships with both of those countries. And the reason for that is the same in a lot of countries around the world, and that is because it's in the United States' best interest to have good relationships with those countries. What we're hearing, you know, what we see on this baseline news is simply these facts that don't really give you any context.
Yeah, well, when it comes to news, the best source of news would be the BBC, to be honest. That's the source of news I trust most. CNN comes second. And you haven't seen Fox News in this country, in the U.S. If you see that news channel, you will see bad news.
Well, I don't even think anyone actually calls it news anymore. Fox News is is ridiculous. What do you think about Fox News, Randy?
It's a joke. And I don't think... they have a very wide viewership, but those people they like it for the bias. They like it for the entertainment aspect.
But the issue is that Fox News touts itself as, you know, the fair and balanced network. We will give you the facts, the truth, the with balance. Which is, if people don't know, Fox News is the most biased Republican, maybe even neoconservative news channel ever. It's ridiculous how much it is.
And the hilarious part is, you should see the Fox channel, which is the most liberal TV channel in the U.S.
Which one?
The Fox channel. One of the major TV networks here is Fox.
Right. Yeah.
And they have their own general channel, which is completely separate from Fox News. And this TV channel is one of the most liberal TV channels in this country.
Turkey, just one question before we go to our local stories. You didn't mention Al Jazeera in the sources that you trust. Did you forget about it? Or
no, I did not forget about it. Al Jazeera, I honestly don't trust Al Jazeera. I don't know about it currently. I haven't watched it for the last year. But the older times, Al Jazeera has always been biased against Saudi Arabia. I don't know about the Al Jazeera, the English channel. From what I heard, apparently it's a good channel. However, the Arabic channel does have, unfortunately, they are not level-headed. Their reporters do have opinions, and they completely show those opinions in their reports. So you don't get a balanced view of anything.
Okay, well, I guess this is going to be the end of the first section of the show, and we are going to dive into our local stories right now. So, who should we start with? Turkey, maybe. Do you want to tell us about what happened in Saudi Arabia in the past month?
Well, there's a few interesting things. One of them, there's a law that's being studied in Saudi Arabia where they're going to, in court, if a person who is required to appear in court does not appear in court, the judge would have the right to either punish them by getting lashes or being put into jail. Apparently, that's a big problem in Saudi Arabia. It's unbelievable the number of court dates that are keep on pushing back because one of the people who are supposed to be there, the defendant or whatever, is not there.
So when you're saying lashes, I want to be clear for our listeners. You have a punishment system which includes whip lashes on the back, right?
Exactly. Yes, we do. And trust me, we do need that, especially for those who do not attend court. Putting them in jail is not enough because it's horrible.
But is that common? Like if you're going to go and walk outside of the crossing lines on the street, are you going to get lashes? Obviously.
No, I'm being silly.
Lashes, obviously.
Lashes are very specific for very specific crimes, and this is and it's basically based on religion. And basically, lashes are for being caught drunk on the streets. You get lashes. Lashes are for criminals that do major crimes, and this is just. This is not a law right now about attending court, but they're considering making it a law. And basically, they do need that. It's just, as I said, it's really horrible. Cases that take 3 days can take up to 5 years because that one person keeps on not attending the court session because he knows nothing would happen if he's not there, and he just doesn't want this to be done because he has an interest of it not being included to court.
Okay, so that's obviously malicious. It's almost, manipulating the court system to your advantage. But something caught my attention. I actually don't drink a lot, but I know that a few friends of mine do drink, and you were saying that if you're caught drunk on the street, like... I guess alcohol is not very permitted in Saudi Arabia, but if you're caught drunk on the street, you can get lashes?
Yeah, the alcohol is forbidden in Saudi Arabia officially, where if you really look for it, you would find it. However, if you are caught by the police or the religious police on the street drunk, then you are arrested and you are punishable with up to 80 lashes. However, it's not
80.
Been popular.
Wow, that's a lot. Okay.
Up to 80. And it really depends. However, most cases nowadays, they just put them in jail for a whole day. The next day, they just kick them out.
Okay. Anything else happened?
Well, this is a hilarious one. Apparently, a Saudi man had some friends of his relatives that visited his home, and he knew about it, and he prepared this huge dinner for them to welcome them at his home. And when they arrived, and he said, and after sitting for a while and having all of this chat, and he invited them to sit to the table to eat, and they said, no, we can't sit to the table. We need to ask you something first. He said, what? And they asked for his daughter's hand in marriage to their son. And apparently they did not know that the daughter was already engaged to someone else. So the guy said, well, I'm sorry. She's already engaged. They're already planning their wedding. I cannot accept your offer. But please move on to the dining table for dinner. And these people insisted that they won't move to the dining table. They won't eat unless he accepts their proposition for his daughter and the marriage. So this guy got so mad, and he put so much work into the food, and his daughter's already engaged. He went into his home. He got his machine gun. He pointed at his guest. He said, either you eat or I'm going to shoot you.
Wow.
You should have tried the lashes, man.
Apparently they ate, and that was it. This is just hilarious.
Oh, wow. That would be too outrageous to put in a movie, even. Okay.
Well, come on. There's still a lot of Bedouin left in tribalism left in this country. And you'll find a lot of weird things like this happen in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. And it's very normal.
I was reading. I was actually listening to your show a few weeks ago. And you were talking about laws to allow women to drive. Can you tell us a little bit about that situation in Saudi Arabia with women and driving?
Yeah, well, currently the officially women are not allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia. They are not allowed to be issued licenses. They are not allowed to drive. However, there is a law that I heard about that is in the Shura, which is the parliament, which is not an elected parliament. It's assigned by the king. All members are assigned by the king. However, in that parliament, they are now studying a law that would allow women to drive. However, it's not an open law. There are conditions to that law. First of all, only women over 30 would be allowed to drive. Women would only be allowed to drive at a specific time, like between 6 a.m. and maybe 8 p.m. And they are only allowed to drive within the city limits. So apparently that's a law being studied. And even though it's not a perfect law, I think at least one step closer and is better than nothing. So that's what's the current situation at the moment.
You know, I think a lot of our listeners might be very surprised and somewhat upset about that situation in Saudi Arabia. I am a very strong women's rights proponent. I had a mother who was very, well, she's still alive, obviously, but she's been very strong on women's rights, and I think that the fact that women and men should be equal in everything is very important in our society. But I would also like to remind people about the situation in Saudi Arabia, the fact that you don't bring democracy and equality in all things in 2 days. And my question to you, Turkey, again, is when did Saudi Arabia start to change from an ancient society where, you know, you had medieval laws, basically, into a modern society? When did that evolution start?
Well, that's something that most people don't know and or don't understand. The fact is, Saudi Arabia did not exist until 70 years ago. Until 70 years ago, it was all about tribes fighting each other. There was no such country in the Arabian Peninsula. So Saudi Arabia is a very, very young country. So apparently, it's possible to change in Saudi Arabia. It just needs time, and it needs to be slow, and it needs for the people to start accepting it, because you can't expect us just to say, you know what, let women drive in 5 seconds, and the entire population will accept it. There's going to be a gigantic opposition to that. We had a huge opposition in the 1970s when the king at the time, King Faisal of Saudi Arabia, declared that women should have the right to go to school and study and learn. It was a huge opposition, but the king stood his grounds, and now women outnumber men in schools.
Well, I would also like to add the fact that in France, women got the right to vote about 60 years ago. So it's not that old. You know, until 60 years ago, women were not allowed to vote at all. So let's go to Armenia. Let's get in the plane and travel really, really fast through Skype to Armenia and ask Arthur what has been happening this past month in his country.
Well, over the last month, or over the last 3 months, actually, we have this continuous standstill or political crisis in the country, whereby the Armenian opposition don't want to accept the results of the February 19th presidential elections.
I'm sorry, Arthur, you're really breaking up. I'm sorry, you're really breaking up, Arthur. I can't really understand what you're saying. Let's try again. You know what? If it's too bad, I'm going to cut it from the final show, because you're really breaking up.
Sure.
Let's try again.
Sure. So what we have is we have an ongoing political crisis between the opposition and the authorities. And we have court cases related to smartphone violence, and strangely, only opposition participants of the violence are being convicted or given, you know, cases or no. And the government, the authorities, nobody.
On I'm sorry, another note, you're breaking up too much. What you were saying is that you have a political issue, and in the court cases, only the opposition is being convicted, right?
Yes, that's right. And
just let me ask you, what's the reason for the conflict?
The opposition doesn't recognize presidential elections which took place in February 19.
Why is
and
that?
And the elections were largely rigged. The international observers recognize the results of the elections in most of the countries, and our Armenian Constitutional Court recognized it, so opposition seems to be in a standstill at this point. However, they have a large base of supporters, so it looks like the situation, the political crisis, is due to continue for still some time.
Okay. Okay, so the connection is not that good, so I think we're going to switch to Randy after that one story. Sorry, Arthur. Randy, what happened in the U.S.? I'm sure a lot of people are wondering what's been happening.
Well, let's see. By far the largest story for the last few weeks and months, even in the United States, across the United States, has been the ongoing primary presidential elections. For one party, the nominee was pretty much decided a couple of months ago, and for the other party, there's no end in sight to the deciding. And
right.
So that's just provided a huge thunderstorm over all the news. There, you can't get out from under it. It leads the news. It ends the news. It's just everything, it seems sometimes.
Does it overshadow other news also? I guess it would, but...
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to ask really quickly to Turkey and Arthur also. We're going to try to get an answer, even with the bad Skype fit that it's doing to us. Turkey, do you even hear about... I guess you do, but do you hear about that in Saudi Arabia?
Oh, yeah. American politics is huge in Saudi Arabia, after all. Okay. It does decide their relationship. I think Obama is the most popular international figure. Yeah. In the elections, and I would think that's the same thing in Saudi Arabia.
Arthur, what about you? Do you hear about that in Armenia?
I think it's about as big news as our opposition protests okay. and everything. We have a large diaspora in U.S. as well, as you know, and they are standing behind the Democrats, so we are kind of really waiting to see what's going to come out of this.
Yeah, it seems like if you listen to the international chatter, I think the whole world is backing Obama, maybe Clinton. But I think, Randy, you guys in Texas are the only ones who like McCain.
Well, that's hard to say.
I'm being silly, of course.
It's just hard to say. There has not been a good read in any part of this country on McCain versus whoever, you know, the Democrats pick, whether McCain yeah. versus Clinton, McCain versus Obama. I wish that the Democrats would just pick one and yeah. and let us find out where the whole country as a whole is polling. It's really hard to know.
Come on, Randy. They already picked one. It's Obama.
It's yeah, just I think
Clinton
it's pretty...
being so stubborn. She refuses to back out, and then she was so idiotic to bring up the assassination of Kennedy as a sample of how she might win.
He is absolutely flaming out. There's no doubt about that. But if I were her, I'd be staying in as well, because there've been too many examples of a front runner all of a sudden having a scandal and promoting, the person who was seemingly out of it.
I was just reminded that I forgot something about you, Randy. We were talking about this with Rachel last month, and I wanted to say that you are very close to Rachel since you're actually her husband. So I just wanted to bring that up, as full disclosure is a rule in this show. So
understood, yes.
You know what? I don't want to spend too much time on the U.S. election, because we talked about it last month and we're going to be talking about it for a few months, I guess. Anything else from the good old U.S., Randy?
In our area, the big news has been the debacle around the state of Texas attempting to deal with a sect of fundamentalist Mormon polygamists in West Texas.
And right, that was a story last month already, wasn't it?
It's yes, and it's still something.
Is it a local story in Texas, or is it a national story?
It is a national story. It's everywhere. It's starting to annoy me, seeing it on TV, in the newspapers, online. Everybody's talking about it.
Wow, okay. It's not like they had other wives and other children in the meantime, is it?
It's really more about the fact that there were arranging marriages between yeah. older men and girls.
They found out some of these girls, they arrested and they put them into state care because they were underage, and it turns out they were adults.
Right. Yeah, that's why I called it a debacle. It's impossible to really know what was going on.
Okay. Anything else, or is that it?
Hey, oh, I'm
done.
We forgot
one thing.
Okay. I'll go ahead, Turkey.
The Phoenix landing.
Right, yeah,
tomorrow.
Yeah, that's been happening today, basically. I think we heard about this in the whole world, and the first pictures are actually available now. I just saw someone Twittering the link. We have pictures on the NASA website. It's you know, I always amazed when things like that happen. I it doesn't get old for me. I don't know if I'm too naive or something, but the fact that we launched an object from the Earth, and that it traveled through space with such accuracy and managed to land on an alien planet, it's completely baffling to me. It doesn't become something that's like, oh yeah, something landed on Mars, yeah, whatever, it's the third time or something like that. But yeah, I don't know, it's always something to me. Arthur, is that really foreign to you, or do you also hear about that?
We heard a little bit about that, and we heard about that also from Russian news, which we get here in somewhat envy tones, but that's what we got, you know. So they were like, okay, then with China we will make plans. Yes, that basically that was on Russian news yesterday, that there's some agreed decisions, discussions with China as to how they're going to use the natural resources from the moon. Something to be contrasted with Phoenix landing story.
Yeah, they have the little Phoenix Mars lander thing, but we're gonna get mining from the moon. What are they gonna get from the moon? Is there like petrol on the moon or gas? Or?
I don't know. I think they're just jealous and they're just trying to make this up as they go. But then you never know. You know, Russians, the Soviets, they launched the first man to the space, so yeah. You don't know.
I have just one story from France, because on the forums, on the website forums, we talked a little bit about strikes, and some people brought up interesting articles about the fact that there's a strong perception that French people do strike a lot, but they are actually, if you look at the numbers, not the biggest strikers in the world. And the thing is, in the past week or the past couple of weeks, we've had so much strikes in this country. And so much noise from the strikes that I understand that the numbers are probably valid and that they're serious numbers. But like, for example, the fishermen were unhappy with the price of gas, which is understandable because basically they go out to sea and bring back their fish. And when they sell it all, because the gas is so expensive, they don't have enough money to eat. So now they blocked basically the ports, which was paralyzing a part of the country's maritime sea transport. But they got a resolution with the government to lower the price of gas for them. Basically, the taxes are going to be lowered a little bit. But the thing is, now, since they got that deal, the taxi drivers and the truckers, the road transportation people, are going on strike also because they want the same deal and because they have the same issues, obviously. So it's another strike. And we also have strikes in the transport industry and the teachers and the people in general because of the purchasing power that we talked about a little bit last month. So basically there are strikes everywhere, and it feels like the country has a lot of striking and striking habits, I guess I would say. And my question is to you guys, what about your countries? Do you guys actually have strikes on a regular basis? Do they influence your daily lives, or is it just something you hear about on the news? Turkey, go.
Well, apparently Saudi Arabia is one of the few countries that strike is illegal. Striking is illegal.
Well, I guess that solves it. A couple of lashes.
That's the answer.
Okay. Arthur, what about you?
I wouldn't say it's a big problem or anything, but, you know, sometimes can be unpleasant, but not that we meet it all the time or camp out it all the time.
Okay. Randy, strikes in the U.S.?
It's the United States. It's the country where more and more people are unionized and strikes happen less and less often.
Okay. So I guess France is indeed a high strike country, no matter what the numbers say. I try to, you know, I do like Stephen Colbert. I choose to follow my gut, not the facts. That's what I do. Another thing that I wanted to talk about is the Cannes Film Festival. I just wanted to know if it was such a big deal for you guys too. And I'm going to ask Randy first. I know that you're a big movie buff and that you go basically see everything, so I'm sure you know about this festival. But the American public hear about it? Because to us, it's like our Academy Awards, basically.
I would say 99.999% of Americans couldn't tell you what month it takes place during.
But do they know what it is?
Vaguely.
To counter to that, for us, it's like Cannes is at least as big as Oscars, but with higher quality.
Thank you, Arthur. I appreciate that.
I mean, I mean, we can bet that whatever comes out of the Cannes Film Festival is really good movies, not just blockbusters for the kids and everything.
You know what? I actually would... it's interesting that you would say that, because I think the idea that Cannes is the prime film festival in the world is an idea that's very common in a very small minority of French movie intellectuals that didn't evolve from the Nouvelle Vague, the new wave of movies from Godard and people like that in the 70s. But the general public, I think, is not very interested in those movies. But I can tell you with certainty that a movie like Iron Man would make more at the box office than the one that got the Palme d'Or, the big award at the Cannes Film Festival. Turkey, I know that music is not... there's issue with music in Islamic countries. What about movies?
Really depends on who you're talking to. Movies are available in Saudi Arabia. We don't have movie theaters, unfortunately, but you can watch movies on DVDs and videotapes. Movies are popular in Saudi Arabia. Cannes Festival is a popular celebration. Apparently, Cannes is also known to the rich people in Saudi Arabia as the place to go. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. First, oh, by the way, congratulations on getting an award. Took you 21 years, you French people, to get it back.
You know, we're givers. We're not takers. We like to... we're generous.
All right, if you say so, I'll just go along with that.
Okay, I guess this brings us to the end of our second segment, and we are going to end with a couple of funny and quirky stories with our and now for something completely different segment as a conclusion. So, guys, we just have time for one or two. Who wants to go for our funny, quirky, silly stories? Turkey, Randy, do you have one? Arthur? Just speak all at once.
I no. think I got my funny one already out.
Okay. Randy, do you have one?
The surprise to me was coming over to look at the news yesterday and finding that the headline news for us, the top of all of the news was the very important knowledge that we must all share that a motorcycle stunt driver had made a jump over a bunch of buses. this was the most important thing we could find out about yesterday. Yeah. I don't know if you want more information on that or not. It's kind of...
Well, I think you were saying it's Evel Knievel's son or something. It's a stuntman, basically, that does that for a living. It's very impressive, but yeah, I don't know if it warrants the top news spot for the day.
I don't know if it warrants even another word, but it was just shocking to me because when I first saw it, I thought, oh, maybe he died. Maybe he sprouted wings and flew. Maybe something.
Hey, that would have been an interesting story indeed. Yeah,
exactly. Is there something that promotes this? No. He just strapped himself to an engine and shot himself and survived, basically.
Arthur, do you have one?
What? Speaking, actually not a fun story, but speaking of top stories, it's really funny that our top story of above all these things happening on Earth was the Eurovision contest and Armenia in it and Russia winning kind of stuff, which is like, I mean, it's a show for, you know, just a show where some bad singing is done and some countries send some singers, you know. And then this is like the biggest national event, and the girl from Armenia who participated is cheered like a hero. I don't know. We have a problem, man.
Well, it was also a very... it was the first time Armenia was entering the competition, wasn't it?
It was the third time. It was the first time that we sent a girl and a beautiful one at that. So that's basically
it.
Hey,
there you go. Yeah, beautiful singing girls is what you need to do if you want headlines. So maybe that's what we're going to do for our next show. We're going to have beautiful singing girls singing to you. I don't know. We'll see about that. But I think that's going to be it for our second episode. And before
singing? That's it? That's all we're getting?
Well, what do you want? It's an audio show. What would you want more? They're going to be singing the news and interesting news.
I'll make you a deal. If you'll send the girls to
somebody
me,
somebody email him the photos, huh?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Randy,
you know what? I'll just visit you.
Yeah, there you go. Just do that. Come to Paris, and we'll try to get the photos all in one place. You were saying something, Randy?
I was just going to make you a deal that if you'd send the girls to me, I will arrange the microphones and the internet connection and make sure that they're very comfortable.
You just want to have the girls in your room. What would Rachel say about that? I wonder.
I better not respond. Never.
Hey, I'm single here. I have no problems.
There you go. We were just saying all those beautiful things about women's rights, and now we're objectifying them. It's terrible. I feel sorry about all this. So before we end this show, I just want to give you guys the opportunity to pimp your shows and to pimp your blogs. Turkey, do you want to tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, my blog is, of course, www.asaudilife.net. And it's basically a blog of me talking about Saudi Arabia, my personal views about Saudi Arabia and the world. But I do answer a lot of questions. People can email me and let me know what they're thinking, what they want to know about Saudi Arabia, and I'll be happy to provide them with whatever they need.
Okay, thanks a lot. Arthur?
Well, you can find me at DITORD, which is ditord@wordpress.com, and it's news from Armenia, basically.
Okay, thanks. And Randy? Is there a link you want to give? Or
the primary way to find me is at theinstance.net. If you're a player/lover of the game World of Warcraft, you'll know what to do from there. If not, well, have a nice day.
Well, thanks. Randy, I know you have to run. Thanks a lot for being with us. I'm going to let you go. And with the other ones, I'm going to just ask our listeners, if they enjoy the show, to give us a little review on iTunes. You can find the show on the iTunes podcast section, of course. And you can also find the website at thepheliusclub.com, obviously. And if you want to contact us through email, you can send an email to contact@thepheliusclub.com. So on the website we have a few news, but mostly the forums is a place where you can come and discuss with a bunch of intelligent, like-minded people, I hope, mostly. So that's going to be it for us this month. I want to thank again Arthur and Turkey and Randy for being here, and I will talk to all of you in a month. Thanks a lot and goodbye. Say bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye, and thanks, Phileas Club.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.